Ludic Thinking and the Dopamine Society. When we think in the year 2020 about games, many of us are immediately drawn mentally into the ludic realm of computer games like Fortnite, Minecraft, Pokemon Go, The Witcher, or Grand Theft Auto. The digital games industry, with multi-billion dollar sales companies like Electronic Arts, have shaped our reality and absorbed our attention with fascinating and even addictive game experiences. Naturally, gamers, having spent tens of thousands of hours playing online games, their parents or significant others, strive for understanding what makes games so captivating. With the growing digitalization in our lives, this topic has become omnipresent, as our interactions with mobile phones and computers all seem to follow the same patterns of game and play using apps or browsing the internet. Terms like game design, gamification, serious gaming, experience or human-centered design or interaction design have become very popular, even fashionable, and try to offer answers and tools for comprehending and applying elements of play and games into various aspects of our lives, from playful elementary school learning to agile and ludic corporate culture. At the same time, many individuals have developed growing emotional resistance against games and gaming, and an intellectual unwillingness to get tainted with or associated with games. At this point, let us detach a bit from the urgent need to fix ongoing business challenges or gamify the imperfect world and open our minds to the kingdom of contemplating the meaning of play and games for humanity as such. As Shakespeare put it in his comedy As You Like It, all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. You probably know it. Shakespeare is describing a playful world we are in, and an essence of play and games might be encountered anywhere. It is Johann Huizinger who brought up the origin and significance of play in a seminal book, Homo Ludens, from 1938, and he put it like this. Play is older than culture. For culture, however inadequately defined, always presupposes human society. And animals have not waited for man to teach them their play. We can safely assert even that human civilization has added no essential feature to the general idea of play. Animals play just like men. We have only to watch young dogs to see that all the essentials of human play are present in their merry gambols. They invite one each other to play by a certain ceremoniousness of attitude and gesture. They keep to the rule that you shall not bite, or not bite hard, your brother's ear. They pretend to get terribly angry, and what is most important in all these doings, they plainly experience tremendous fun and enjoyment. Play has a meaning. Although it might be older than humanity, it certainly has a cultivating and civilizing effect on human beings. Play with words led to poetry and drama, to philosophy, negotiations, science and progress. Play with colors and shapes led to art. Play with rhythm and notes led to music and dancing. Sports, colosseums, circuses, holy rituals, flirting, teaching, learning and education, and all the games we have been playing, they all depend on and constitute playful interactions. I would go as far as to say that almost every human interaction can be interpreted as play. The Homo Ludens of Huizinger is a fully fledged Weltanschauung, a paradigm, as we'd like to call it nowadays. The human being plays and can only be understood and directed through games and play. Or as Huizinger put it, play cannot be denied. You can deny, if you like, nearly all abstractions. Justice, beauty, truth, goodness, mind, God. You can deny seriousness, but not play. Play matters so much, seems true. The desire to play is fundamentally the desire to be, said existentialist Jean-Paul Sartre. Or, as Friedrich Schiller put it, der Mensch spielt nur, wo er in voller Bedeutung des Wortes Mensch ist, und erst nur dort Mensch, wo er spielt. Let us imagine a typical situation. You are in Berlin, waiting for the bus. In total, there is a group of 7 people waiting. Is this a stage? Game, or at least a potentially playful situation? You might say, of course not. But does it not just depend on your perception? Exchanging glances and maybe saying hello are possible game options to pursue. You could also just silently watch the bystanders and pretend just not to care. You might engage in a meaningful conversation, be flirtatious, or encounter an old friend whom you heartily greet. A sudden quarrel might erupt and you have to choose sides, call the police or run away. Or you choose the option to interact with your absent but online WhatsApp friends, post a status pic of the bus stop to kill time, or listen to music. Whatever you do, even if you are as still as a stone, avoiding all interactions, you are still playing a role with your passivity. What if you count the black cars passing by and play an internal lottery that you will treat yourself an ice cream if you spot 10 or more black cars until the bus arrives? We have all been in such a situation and did not perceive anything playful or game-like. It is a matter of perspective. And this leads me to my golden rule of ludic thinking. Every social situation and human interaction can be perceived as a stage or a game and can be transformed and intensified, applying elements of play. Ludic thinking is predominantly an attitude. Let us go through the golden rule step by step. First, we see the option to perceive situation as stages or games. This does not mean that we have to. We might individually choose to declare certain situations as strictly serious or off-limit for ludic thinking and acting. We might also see certain situations as stages or games, but we could choose not to transform or intensify them, because we see no value added for the substantial effort that would be required. Choose your ludic battles wisely, since our energy is limited. Second, elements of play can be added to unique one-off events, recurring ceremonials, or repetitive processes. It comprises offline and online interactions, and although entertainment, education, physical therapy, and business interactions might be natural fields of application because of an expected behavioral effect of the ludic action, we are in no way limited to restrict us in any way. If all situations can be perceived as stages or games, this could imply that most of our social interactions are poorly designed or follow an outdated interaction design. Or do you have the impression of being exposed to meaningful, entertaining, and or goal-driven situations on a regular basis. Many interactions still just happen and are not scripted and follow, if at all, an improvised agenda. This obviously was for the last 50,000 years not a dramatic human problem, but the normal reality, with eventual special occasions for religious ceremonies, theatres, and games. However, in the 21st century, we have been and are constantly spoiled with playful online interactions. Online interactions clearly know the design imperative to be purpose-driven and frequently embed elements of play. These interactions provide us with a huge dose of dopamine per second. Our brain is constantly on fire. This is a new playful normal in 2020, which I call the dopamine society. But what happens to the analog and non-scripted, non-programmed, and non-designed reality? No fun, no dopamine. And dopamine is highly addictive. This kind of reality is widely perceived as boring and senseless. If our brain is not satisfied with the amount of dopamine per second, it will engage in other activities to get the necessary dosage. The game designer Jane McGonigal famously referred to this perception as reality is broken, and thus explained a mass exodus of human beings into virtual online worlds like World of Warcraft or other games, where everything is scripted and fully loaded with elements of play and meaningful and balanced challenges. This leads me to my iron rule of ludic thinking. Social situations and human interactions that do not provide a minimal viable experience in terms of dopamine per second will naturally be avoided and neglected in favor of more dopaminergic experiences. The minimal viable experience differs from individual to individual. Some people still find it stimulating to read books with hundreds of pages or watch TV. But those who have been exposed and conditioned to highly dopaminergic experiences need one or two more screens open to survive a TV event with their grandparents and would certainly not go through the pains of reading a book. The good news for dopamine junkies is that our mobile phones are providers of almost endless streams of dopamine. Unfortunately, this development is upending everything we cherished in former times, like education or work or culture. If we do not binge on a certain activity, it is simply not interesting enough. And who likes binging on books, playing the violin, or doing cost calculations for a company? We hear that there is an engagement crisis in education and at work. From a ludic perspective, there is a simple explanation. Work and education simply do not provide a minimal viable experience. The engagement models are broken. They only seem two options to reverse this problem. We either reset the society and bring it back to lower levels of dopamine per second and higher boredom tolerance, or we make our education and work experiences more competitive in terms of dopamine per second. My educated guess is that we will not be able to bring large portions of the population back to lower dopamine needs. If this is the case, it is time to level up our education and work experiences. Let the games begin.